You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 370 and our 10th full season of the podcast. Today is Sunday, June 11, 2017, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hamilton and Curtis. And guys, in tonight's show, we'll discuss the start of the Sean Newcomb era, Dansby's great month, Chris Medlin, and the MLB draft. But first, a quick break. So guys, we kind of got an answer to what the team will do with Bartolo Colon after he had another travesty of a start last Monday, giving up 8 runs over 3 2/3, a game I had the pleasure of bringing my 80-year-old dad to show him the stadium for the first time. Well, and bought really nice seats so that we could see that batting practice during a game.
Big sexy.
Got to see a lot of offense for the other team.
Exactly. Oh, man. All right. But so with the doubleheader that was coming up this past weekend, the team called up Sean Newcomb, who we got as part of the Anderton Simmons trade. He was really the big piece there to start on Saturday. And all he did was go 6 1/3, 4 hits, 1 run, 0 earned, 2 walks. One was intentional, 7 strikeouts. So Ham, let's start with you. What was your favorite part of Newcomb's start on Saturday?
I'm so excited overall. First off, it's the same feeling we had when Dansby came up. It's the same feeling we're going to have when Ozzy comes up, and then Sims and Freed and Dustin Peterson. And our whole turnaround is going to be made up of moments like this that are the building blocks for going forward. And they're so huge when you get these guys to come up and these moments
and be so good immediately.
And then on top of that, and then on the fact that he backed it up with such a stellar start just multiplies how exciting it is. Personally, what I liked watching him is he was toggling his fastball between like 90, 91, and then he could get it up to 95. But I remember Greg Maddux saying, 2 miles per hour difference is a huge difference, right? And if you can control your fastball and have the ability to sort of mix it up within speeds, that's amazing. And the other thing, and he just had great control of his fastball. And it looks like he's got 4 pitches overall. He's got that fastball, he's got a curveball, he has a slider, he has a changeup. But on Saturday, he only threw 2 changeups the whole game and 5 sliders the whole game. It was all fastball and curveball, and he dominated. And it was just so exciting. He belongs. And I know that he's going to have starts where he walks a lot of people, right? It's not like all of a sudden he doesn't have control issues.
Right. I mean, he had 4.8 walks per 9 coming out of the minor leagues.
Right.
It will happen.
But to have a 73% strike rate, to be locked in, and to be competing at the major league level out of the gate, it does not get better than that.
Yeah. I mean, and that first at bat, with that curveball that just dropped in, and then you have that guy, I don't remember the name of the ump, but the ump that like turns around 180 degrees and pumps both fists.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was ridiculous. And speaking of the speed changes, so a couple things. It was exactly 89.5 to 95.7 on his fastball. And that curveball he dropped in at 80 miles an hour after a fastball that hit 95 in that first at bat and a called third strike. I mean, it was just the best possible way to start that game for him. And imagine the confidence and the, like you said, I belong here, that it had to give him. In fact, that he had a quote after the game. DOB did a Q&A with him. Go look at our Twitter timeline or DOB's, I guess, to find it. And he said, quote, "Yeah, I'd say after that first at bat, I got him. Obviously, I was like, all right, I belong here, and just kept going forward." I mean, that stuff, like when I read that, that stuff gave me goosebumps. I mean, it's just like the future is here with this guy.
Yep.
Curtis, what struck you?
Well, I guess the lack of walks, you guys sort of touched on that. I mean, that was a big concern coming in, it was control issues. And like you said, he only had one unintentional walk. Ham, you brought up that game score, which is sort of like a QB rating that Bill James has put together for pitchers. And his game score was a 68, which you started a 50, and then you kind of accumulate points based on outs and things like that. And he is only the third pitcher for the Braves to rate above a 65 in his debut since sort of the Coppola era has begun. I won't mention the other guys because that will sort of put a damper on what you feel like is going ahead, but it is very exciting. Manny Banuelos is one of those guys. But, you know,
Buddy Carlisle.
It was, yeah, Whistler was the other.
Oh,
but,
yeah, sure.
It was exciting to see. It was exciting to see because obviously so much of what we have right now with the Braves is potential and coming and expectation and all these things. And so it's so nice, obviously, with Whistler, with Blair both faltering pretty dramatically. It was so exciting to see one of our really important pitching prospects come up and look not only good, but really dominating, you know, and the composure, everything. He had out pitches, strikeout pitches that were, he didn't have to rely on a fastball. You know, he had breaking pitches that he was striking guys out with too. So, and really was attacking the strike zone the whole time. So,
yes, yeah, 70 was, strikes in 96 pitches.
Yeah, it was something to behold. And especially that he was filling in for Cologne, who's just been so god awful.
Everything it the was opposite just, of him.
Yeah, it was just so nice to kind of get that out of the way and have this opportunity to see what waits on the horizon for us.
So, Kurt, let's talk short-term horizon. What do you think the front office is going to do with the starting rotation, at least in the short term?
Well, of course, it's with the DL situation, Newcomb will at least get one more start because Cologne won't be back from his DL.
Until like the day after, right? He went on the DL June 6th, but Newcomb's spot will come up on the 16th in Florida.
So, I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea. I mean, it would be difficult for them to remove Newcomb if he continues to pitch well. I mean, again, we talked about Rio Ruiz and some of the younger players last week. You sort of feel like you want to turn the corner on Cologne at this point. That seems like a lost cause, and it's much more compelling to see what Newcomb can have. And obviously they're not going to put Newcomb in the bullpen because there's no point in that. So yeah. I hope that he's here to stay, but I would not be surprised if when Cologne gets back that, you know, it's sort of Cologne again and Newcomb gets sent back.
To oh, man.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because shortly after they put him on the DL, the front office or Snitker, I don't remember who, came out and said, well, we're going to let him get healthy and then he'll return to the rotation. I mean, they came out and said that in the first 24 hours of him going on the DL. But Ham, I mean, how do you...
There's just no scenario.
Well, there is.
Yeah.
I mean, if Newcomb goes out in his next two starts, he gives up five earned apiece and walks six guys in each, it becomes a little more difficult, right?
I guess
but if
it
does. if he's even halfway decent, so Ben Ingram, the guy on the Braves radio network who does the pregame and the postgame, and it was interesting to hear someone come out from the organization, kind of, at least he's on the, you know, radio network. He tweeted after Newcomb's start, he said, Newcomb has been infinitely better than anything else we've seen from this spot in the rotation. The job has to be his moving forward.
It has to be. In reality,
right, in a vacuum, it has to be.
But what do you, I mean, Steve, you've said it before, we're past cheering for wins and losses at this point, right? You're sort of looking big picture because, but like what, if he showed that he can compete here, what does he have to learn by going back to Gwinnett? He's going to have bad starts. Like, what is he going to learn down there that he doesn't learn up here? I just say, I don't understand why you bring Cologne back. I think Cologne, and I that's what I feel. I could see the Braves still bringing him back, but why bring him back? Just cut your losses. What are you trying to do this season? What is the point?
No, I agree. I mean, look, it all gets back to try to find some value with a good start or two so you can trade him. I don't see that happening. We know that this injury is a phantom injury to begin with. It's not like, oh, well, he's going to turn the corner when his lat feels better.
Yeah, let it linger.
Yes.
Let the injury linger.
Let the made-up injury linger.
Yeah.
Maybe they put him in the bullpen. I don't know. The thing is, is that Copy and the front office. Yeah, no. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bringing him out of the bullpen seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But Copy and the front office have not given up on wins and losses. They do not want a 90-loss season. They want to keep momentum going. I mean, that's the thing. But they have to come to their senses that forget about the money. I know it's easy for us to say. But that this is not going to help the team. It's not even going to forget the future. It's not going to help the wins and losses. Newcomb should help the wins and losses too.
Yeah. I don't know. One last thing I'd like to say before we move on is that with Newcomb, I'm starting to see the identity of this team. Like, I feel like for a long time I was cheering for Laundrie, you know, Eric Ibar. I was not really connected to the players, and you have Dansby come up, and now you have Newcomb, and you've got Fulte, and all of a sudden the outfield is surprisingly one of the best outfields.
Yeah, Inciarte. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, you have. I mean, they're one of the top two offenses in the National League. The outfield. I love Kemp. I want him to stay. I would be sad if Markakis went. Inciarte is one of my favorite Braves. I mean, I think. I'm starting to cheer for the players like individually, and it's just, you know, you add pieces like Newcomb, who's had a lot of buildup, and at some point, like I said, Sims and Freed, right, and Dustin Peterson and Ozzy. It's exciting. This is the good part of the rebuild.
I agree. I mean, other than not feeling connected to Ibar, which I think is weird, Ham, I agree with everything you said.
I did like calling him the Admiral.
Yes, yeah. See, he brought something to the table.
He did.
All right, so Ham, the other side of the Saturday doubleheader was Whistler, who got the start in the second game. And I saw on a couple of the pregame or postgame shows on the TV broadcasts, they were talking about, well, you know, it's Whistler too, and it's setting up a competition between he and Newcomb, which was a stretch to begin with.
Yeah.
But Whistler went out and did pretty much what I thought he would do. He gave up 4 earned. He gave up a home run. It's just kind of a shame that Whistler has not recaptured some of those great starts in 15 and even the first half of 16. I know, you know, the Braves refer to Whistler now as one of the guys they rushed. And maybe there's really greatness ahead for Whistler, but it's a shame that we're not there yet with him.
Yeah. I mean, so... when Greg Maddux started, and he's not Greg Maddux, you know, but his first season, he had like 6 starts. He was horrible. He pitched 30 games his second season. He went 6-14 with a 5.61 ERA, right? So it took him a while. Again, Whistler is not Maddux, but I think in some ways he's got a lot of the same makeup. So I think there is a chance. I mean, I do think... it would not be crazy for Whistler to be a competent NL, you know, major league starter down the road. I wonder if that ship has sailed with the Braves. Like, he's just had so many bad starts, and I think his star has lost some of its luster. And I bet the Braves move him if they get a chance to. But, you know, I'm sad because I really liked him and I thought he was going to be great, but I don't see him doing well for the Braves. And I see them.
You know, I do believe that. I mean, obviously, he's going to go back down. He's already down because he was the 26th man on Saturday. He has to go down immediately. But yeah, he starts to put together some good starts in Gwinnett. I wouldn't doubt if he gets packaged up. Chris, you see him? I'm sorry, Curtis. Chris,
Chris.
The fourth guy on the podcast.
He sounds just like Kurt and Ham.
Yeah, he's one of the other guys.
Right.
Kurt, do you see Whistler going away?
Well, I mean, the thing about Whistler is it's like at what point do they, I mean, they rushed him. So I guess why still talk about that? You know, I mean, I can't, there is no place for him now. His value is sort of completely gone. So I can't see.
I don't know, unless he starts pitching well again. I mean, he has major league experience and he had success in the major leagues. I don't think people are going to ignore that. It's not been that much.
The return is going to be non-existent.
Oh, no, absolutely. It'll be pennies on the dollar at this point. Tomorrow, the return would be pennies on the dollar. No, he would have to turn some things around. No doubt about it.
But I guess why they still talk about the fact that they rushed him. I don't understand.
Well, it may just be spin.
I mean, and they talked the same about Aaron Blair. But it's sad because we were so excited about him. We were so excited about him when he first came up and how well he pitched and his poise and everything else. And we were really thought that we had something there and that he was going to be foundational. And it's unfortunate. And maybe the talk that they rushed him up. And I mean, why don't they take all that out? And I don't know if it's that he's just pressing now because he, you know, is concerned about every pitch that he throws and every situation that he's in, that he's got to prove himself to be worthy to be back up here. And he's seeing guys now passing him by and guys on the horizon that are soon going to be coming and potentially.
Right. And then he's farther down on the depth chart. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I can't see every single time I feel like he comes up and I feel like, you know, that might be the last time we ever see Matt Whistler. And this really might be the last time we ever see Matt Whistler.
Yep.
All right, guys. Next up, some more headlines from the week. And let's start with this past Friday night against the Mets. It was a special night for Dansby Swanson. He drove in the first two runs. He scored the winning third run in the bottom of the ninth after stretching out what was going to be a pretty easy single into a double. He made great plays in the field. And look, obviously it's been up and down for Dansby this season, but he's on one of his highest highs again this year, heading into Sunday's finale with the Mets. His last 30 games have looked like this. His slash line's 275, 353, 471, four homers, eight doubles, 13 walks. So, Curtis, where's your head at with Dansby now?
Well, and the June numbers are even better. In June, it's 371, 421, 629. So it feels like he's sort of finally figured it out. Now, the BABIP, which you guys love to talk about, is 393, which is a little ridiculous.
But remember, it was you know, in like the 200s.
Sure. He's due to have some luck certainly go his way. But this is why that we've talked a lot about Dansby and you know, how much longer they would allow him to stay if he really sort of continued to struggle. Steve, you know, we talked about what, you know, is it another 20 games or something if he's still sitting at where he is?
Yeah.
And this is obviously why they felt like they should keep him around. You know, I mean, obviously he's another foundational player. So they see something in him that they feel like he has got the metal that he can work his way through these things. You read the quotes from the other players and they talk about his maturity and his level-headedness and his approach and everything like that. And that was, I mean, that hustle play, I mean, that was like a routine
single
right in the center fielder. I mean, it wasn't even like he had to move that far, and just stuff like that is just awesome. Ham, you talked about it. You start to buy into players. Well, watching that play, I mean, if Dansby Swanson is going to commit himself like that to playing baseball for the Atlanta Braves, he will be an all-time favorite, not just a favorite for the next few years. You know, I mean, to hustle and I mean, he won that game.
Yeah, I mean, no exaggeration. Stretching that into a double was the game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great. It's great to see him turning it around and maybe getting more comfortable and relaxing and that everything's pointing in the right direction for him.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to see what his ceiling is. You know, he's improving every day. I think the story on him this season will be a story of the splits. Like, I think it's going to be a tale of two halves. I bet his second half, when you look at, you sort of step back and look at it, is much better than his first half, and it's much more, you know, I think we'll see
consistent.
A lot. Yeah, consistent. I mean, he struck out twice this week, right? I think pinch hit appearance on Monday, and then today in a crusher last out. But you know, he's learning. He's taking the coaching. He's getting a lot of exposure, and I think he's just going to get better and better, and that's exciting to see. Absolutely.
Yeah. So DOB had an article about an interview with him about, look, you know, how's it been with your tough start and turning it around and social media and all that stuff. And he just kept going back to, I have all the support of everyone in the clubhouse. They're keeping me grounded. That's the important thing. I trust in my ability, you know, and in the post game Friday night, it was so great. They were talking to him about that really awesome play that he made, where Matt Adams had to make a good play on the throw because it was a really tough, it was a tough throw. It was bang, bang. And Dansby goes, they asked him about the play, and Dansby goes, yeah, it's good to finally have someone at first base who can pick it, which was just hilarious, you know, and that he feels that comfortable and is that supported in the clubhouse to make that joke about the foundation of of the club and Freddie Freeman. I mean, it was just great. The whole reporter gaggle around him just busted out laughing. I mean, it was just good stuff.
Yeah,
really great.
Great defensive play today too. The one where he went back and like he and Ender charged at the same time over his head. Amazing catch. Yep. So yeah, much better than
the. And he made some great plays just in the dirt too. Ranging toward third base and making amazing throws. I mean, look, he's had a lot of errors, but my God, you can really see what this guy can do. And he releases the ball fast.
Yeah, and he works hard to get better. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So Ham, following Newcomb's call up to the big club, Chris Medlin continued his fast tracking through the organization.
Meteoric rise.
Oh my God. Moved from Mississippi to Gwinnett. He got the start Friday night, which would have been Newcomb's start. He finished with 5 2/3, 5 hits, 3 earned, 3 walks. 2 of those runs were on a bloop single. So, Ham, do you imagine we see Medlin in the starting rotation at some point this year?
I have said how much I love Chris Medlin a lot, and I'm going to say it again. I love Chris Medlin. I love him. There, I said it. But I don't think there is a spot for him in the rotation. I would love to see him come be a long reliever, you know, someone who maybe could take the spot and come in some, you know, earlier inning tough jams. But I don't know where he fits on this team. I don't want him replacing Tehran. That's not happening. Or Fulte. Or Garcia, who we'll talk about. Or Newcomb, who is now our fourth starter.
But that's the thing. I mean, it's going to be right. So if Newcomb has Colon's spot, then it's Dickey. We're going to talk about the starting pitching in a second. Dickey had his best start of the season this past week by a mile. Yeah. If he keeps doing that and Garcia keeps doing what he's doing, both those guys could be gone.
Yeah, and that's it. So I guess that's the scenario. But I don't see him replacing anybody, or I don't see it happening. I think I see his meteoric rise sort of slowing a little bit. But I would love to see him. I don't want to see Aaron Blair again. I don't want to see Matt Whistler again.
You know, Blair threw a shutout today for Gwinnett.
I don't care.
I mean, look, but come on. It's really still very early with Blair. I mean, Blair could figure it out at some point this year. Blair could figure it out next year. Don't give up on Blair. Hammy, don't give up on Blair.
I pick Medlin. Come on now. I pick Medlin over Blair because I love him.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Curtis, do you think if we ship out 2 of these guys that, you know, and no one's, you know, Sims and Medlin maybe in the second half?
Absolutely. I think he's the next guy up, frankly. I think if Dickey got hurt or if whatever, they move a guy, if Medlin can continue to pitch with any sort of decency.
I guess. But really, you wouldn't do Sims before Medlin?
I don't know what I would do, but I'm just telling you, we will see a start from Chris Medlin for the Atlanta Braves before the season is over, and I bet it's more than one. That's my prediction.
Thank you for being
seasonal shot in the dark, because unlike Ham, I do like Chris Medlin.
Oh, hey now.
All right, so Curtis,
I would so much rather have Sims than Medlin, though, at this point.
The whole, you know, the future is now thing.
Exactly.
You guys are monsters.
Medlin has worked so hard. How could we say that?
It's true.
All right. So Curtis, I would say that the starting pitching was so liberated by Bartolo Colon going on the DL that it did something we haven't seen in a long time. It put together, if you don't count Whistler's start, because that's sort of a fake, It put together six really good or great consecutive starts this week, starting with Garcia on Tuesday through Garcia again in the finale against the Mets. So if the offense that disappeared against the Mets this weekend, and boy, it really did, although the pitching was quite good from New York, if it resurfaces and this starting pitching keeps up, the Braves could actually win some games again, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. There's no reason to believe that they shouldn't. And it's, I mean, it's what you want. You want, I mean, more than anything, you want consistent pitching. When you go out there and a guy gives up eight or nine runs in the first two innings and you've effectively, the game is already over, it's just demoralizing. It's demoralizing as a fan. I can't imagine how demoralizing it is as a player. So the 300-pound elephant has been removed from the lineup. And it was fun. I mean, unfortunately they did not have a great homestand this week, but watching the pitching was really something to behold because of, you know, and of course the response was that the offense totally went in the tank. But there's no reason to believe that the offense can't get cranked up really quickly. And that, you know, quality starts lead to quality wins.
Yeah. Wouldn't it really be something if pairing Dickey with Flowers was the thing that, you know, he needed to sort of figure it out, and Dickey starts really dealing again? Because the ball was moving. He had a bunch of strikeouts. He either didn't walk anyone or had one. I mean, like, he cut down his walks dramatically. It was an amazing start.
It was very exciting. Hopefully he has a lot more right before he's traded.
Exactly.
And maybe and we talked about this some, maybe switching Suzuki to catch Tehran at home. You know, he had a great start too, and he's right. Obviously been awful at home. So
yeah,
it's sometimes as simple as that type of stuff.
I think offensively, though, I think we may be really feeling Freddie's absence. I think we had some adrenaline and sort of momentum with the Matt Adams signing to, you know, but I think our offense, I don't think, is going to produce without Freddie. I think we're going to.
Well, Adams was terrible this week. And of course, now as Adams goes, the offense goes.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
That's a joke.
It's what they always say.
Yes.
So, Ham, the MLB draft is Monday night. The Braves are picking fifth.
Yeah.
So, are you more of a just take the best guy on the board, or do you want the Braves to go a particular way? What, and if so, do you have any names in mind?
I am the thing I wish we did more is pick college players who had shown that they could compete against top, you know, that next level of pitching, especially hitters.
So you're talking position players.
Talking position players or in pitchers as well, but to a lesser degree,
like
right?
Mike Minor and Joey Devine.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about Dansby played a year in college, right? So or two. So I think. You know, we're talking about Royce Lewis, a position player who's a high school player out of Los Angeles. That's exciting. I don't know where he goes with Dansby and Ozzy. There's this guy, Mackenzie Gore, who's a pitching prospect out of North Carolina, another high school pitching arm. He's a lefty, or he may be a righty. But the one I like, actually, is Brendan McKay, who's at Louisville. He's a lefty. He's also got some upside, they say, offensively. But, you know, he just pitched his team into the College World Series. I think that makes you better. You look at Tim Duncan in other sports, right? And I think at some point, maybe stop taking long shots on people and maybe investing in proven commodities. And I think we have the chance, picking fifth, to go with a proven commodity with McKay. That's my take.
Curtis, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like sort of these more seasoned guys. And one of the guys that I saw, Keith Law, I think his latest has them taking this guy, Kyle Wright, who is the pitcher from Vanderbilt, who is supposed to be, might even be the best player in the draft, but because of needs by some other teams, he might drop down to five where the Braves are picking. There's also the possibility that the Braves do what they did last year, which is sort of, you know, reach in the first round to underpay a guy. So then in the second pick that they can then, you know, maybe talk a guy out of going to college or something like that by paying him more. All that sort of money slotting that they do in the draft for the MLB. So that's obviously something that the Braves have done in the past and could do again, that they might just sort of try and maximize their picks because it's money locked. You can only spend so much money on the draft in Major League Baseball.
Right.
So who would you want them to get, Curtis? Is it that right guy?
Yeah, I mean, from what I read, he is potentially the best pitcher in the draft. He starts for Vanderbilt, and obviously Vanderbilt's one of the best teams in college right now. Right-handed pitcher, big tall guy. In my heart, I want them to start getting some position players and start getting some offensive players, because I feel like we go through this exercise every year where they draft, 27 pitchers and three position players. So I would love for them to start sort of stockpiling. I don't think we really maybe have an appreciation for how much offensive talent they have in the farm system, because it doesn't really get as many highlights as the exemplary pitching they have. But yeah, I would love a position player, just an exciting position player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that said, I really would rather them take the most talented guy on the board. Yeah. I mean, Kyle Wright would be amazing, right? The write-ups that I've seen have him really like a top three guy, but if the Twins take somebody and some things shift around, he really could fall into their laps. And look, it's all talent and it's all trade chips, and get the most talented guys and, trust the front office that they can make it work from there. I just want them to take the best guy on the board.
And they interviewed the head of scouting, and I just totally lost his name. But that's what he said. He was in the booth for one of the games, and I'm not that he's going to give away what he's going to do, obviously, but he's like, yeah, we pretty much take, the best available player there. And that's sort of what we target.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like football where you're hoping to have players who can impact immediately, right? You're looking at a 3-year commitment before. I mean, who knows what your team looks like in 3 years? Yeah. So it's a big argument to go for, best talent.
All right, guys, next up is Shot in the Dark, but first, a quick break. All right, guys, let's look at the predictions for the coming week by starting at last week. And our listener provided Shot in the Dark. It was from Benjamin Massengale on Twitter, who predicted that the Braves would go 5-3 this week and that Cologne and Tehran would give up 23 runs and 8 homers. Of course, that was assuming Cologne was going to get 2 starts, which didn't happen.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Well, it was a 3-5 week. Cologne did his part in his first and only start, giving up 8 and 1 home run. Tehran only gave up 1 earned and 1 home run, so for a total of 9-2. So kind of glad that it didn't go as Benjamin had predicted. All right, so guys, let's look back at our predictions. So, Ham, you predicted that the Braves would have a positive win differential.
It's hard to say.
16. Oh, my God. Of 16 or more in wins and 16 or more in losses. So with only 3 games, but that 14-1 victory, they were plus 16 in the wins and minus 22 in the losses.
Yeah, baby.
So yeah. All right, Curtis, you predicted 5-3. But that the Braves would give up 50 earned runs. They went 3-5. They gave up 33 earned runs.
It started out so well.
With Cologne, I know.
Yeah.
All right. I predicted that Dansby would hit over 400. And for the record, heading into the Sunday's game, the final game against the Mets, he was hitting 429. But then he went 0-3 in Sunday's game, ended up at 375. So, Hammy,
back
you
to
get
back.
It. Yeah. Did you win last week? You making that up?
I thought I did. Oh, no, that was the Matt Adams week. You and Curtis split it last week.
All right, so we are tied up heading into the middle of June. All right, so let's look at next week. What is your shot in the dark, Hammy?
Another math one for you, Steve. Happy early Father's Day. Yeah. The Braves outfield, one of the best in the National League, just to repeat that, will hit over 325 collectively and score 10 runs or more, but only hit 1 homer.
Okay, very good. I'll start Saturday night on that.
maybe Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah. I'll work out an Excel sheet for you just to track as the games go on.
All right, Curtis, what do you got?
Well, Matt Adams was, as I mentioned before, terrible this week. Batted below 180 for the Braves. So big bounce back for the player. Batting over 325 with 6 extra base hits. Big city. coming back.
The player Adams. Okay.
The player.
I've got Folti, who has two starts this week. I have Folti giving up no more than three earned over those two starts. All right, folks, don't forget to get your shot in the dark in before first pitch on Monday. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right, guys, let's look at the week ahead. It's six games this week, all on the road, three in Washington, three in Florida. And here are the pitching matchups. Folti will face Strasburg and his 2.8 ERA. Next up, Dickey faces Joe Ross and his 6.16. And then we'll finish up in Washington, Tehran versus Roark and his 3.87. So we miss a lot of the big guns in Washington. And we took two or three from the Nationals the last time we saw them. So
Strasburg, Folti, you know, will be a nice one.
Yeah, pretty exciting. I agree. All right, next up, we head to Florida, where it will be, I assume, unless something insane happens, Newcomb versus Dan Straley and his 3.89. How exciting and must-see TV will that be to just watch Newcomb's second start?
Oh, I thought you were so talking great. About watching Dan Straley.
No, he's my second favorite player.
Right.
All right, so Dan Straley's got a 3.89. Next up, Garcia versus Jeff Locke and his 4.02. And then we finish up the series in Florida with Garcia against Jose Ureña and his 3.96.
Just so you don't get beat up on Twitter, we're at home against the Marlins.
We're just out for three games.
I think that's right.
I think Friday night is Dansby's bobblehead night, Steve, and then I think it's superhero ticket package night. I'm looking at it right now on Saturday night.
Okay, I'll have to agree with you only because you're right, Hammy.
Well played.
Yes.
I just didn't want you to get, you know, all the hate mail you get.
No, sometimes. I know all the, yeah, so, yeah.
All just the short additional, road trip. All the additional hate mail right, you were going to get.
Now I will get it.
All right, so, Hammy, Mr. Know-It-All, what do you think the Braves will go this week, six games?
3-3.
Yeah, Curtis?
Yeah, 3-3.
Yeah, it seems.
We lose the series in Washington. We win the one against the Marlins.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. All right, folks, that is the show. Remember, you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.
Had to admit the problem.